DW Deutsche Welle Pulse. I worry about nothing. I am wearing that nada. I'm sitting pretty impatient, but I know you gotta put in them hours. Well, what a great way to kick off this show. Hello and a very warm welcome to Pulse. My name is Jane Nyinge, and for sure we've got a special show lined up for you, starting with Zimbabwe. And with just a few days in office, what do young people think of the new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is 75?
To me, really, he's not the full package like the president I expect. I expect somebody who is much younger and who surely knows what us young people need.
I think his age is a bit above par.
His age does concern me, but I think a lot of things will change.
You will also get to hear why many of Africa's problems are associated with bad leadership. For this and much more, please stick around for the next 20 minutes. Let's put it in motion. I'ma give you a promotion. I'll make it feel like a vacate, turn the bed into an ocean. We don't need nobody, I just need your body. Nothing but sheets in between us, ain't no getting off early. Right, it's a new dawn in Zimbabwe. Many, especially the young people, are hopeful for a better future after Emmerson Mnangagwa took over the presidency of the country, bringing to an end 37 years of Robert Mugabe's leadership. But even before the dust settles, the new government has declared Mugabe's birthday, that is February 21st, to be a public holiday. This follows an intense lobbying by the Youth League of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party. Joining me from Harare is DW's Privilege Mshaniri. Privilege, what do you make of this announcement?
It is now a point of debate. People are saying that it is rather unfair to declare a holiday of a man who has just been dismissed by the people, saying that he is no longer fit for office. So it is now a point of debate, and people are saying that it was rather too early, and also the declaration, it should have followed consultation of the Zimbabwean citizens on what they think about declaring 21st February as a holiday.
Now, having said that, a privilege, the new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is expected to name his cabinet sometime this week. Is there a likelihood of seeing more younger and fresh faces in his cabinet?
Already there's been some predictions of his cabinet, and some of the names that are being brought into the list, very young people. And these are not only coming from the ZANU-PF as a party, they are also coming from the opposition. But then most of this is coming out through social media. So it's yet to be seen whether you would truly incorporate young people into the cabinet that is most likely to be announced this week.
Well, given his age, that is 75 years, are young people able to identify with him, Emmerson Mnangagwa?
Some people are just happy that they have a new face as a president. They are not minding about his age. But some of the young people that I've spoken to are actually saying that at 75 years, they are not really sure whether he is going to be able to connect with the issues that young people are facing. Most of them, they are looking forward, yes, of course, for creation of jobs. I spoke to a few young people, and this is what they had to say.
To me, really, he's not the full package like the president I expect. I expect somebody who is much younger and who surely knows what us young people need. But however, we can't write him off completely. We just have to wait and see what he brings on the table for us.
I think his age is a bit above par. If the time that he has now till then, he doesn't make any proper moves to make sure that the youth are looking forward to an actual better Zimbabwe, than just us talking about a better Zimbabwe and no action happening on the ground, his age will actually be a big factor. right? Just the same as the former president was.
You hear that, Jane? You know, these young people, they are expressing that they wished for a younger president. But for now, Zimbabwe is happy that they have a new face.
Well said, their privilege, because we know young people constitute over 75% of Zimbabwean population. What can you say are immediate problems facing them that need to be addressed by the new government?
A couple of young people that I've spoken to, some of them spoke about being able to speak up their mind and express themselves, something that has not been quite happening with the former president, Robert Mugabe, where, you know, there was a clampdown on freedom of expression and even a clampdown of people who would express themselves on social media.
An opportunity to pursue our dreams. Without being fearful, an opportunity to express ourselves and to question the government when they are wrong and to tell them where they are going wrong without being fearful of being victimized or being beaten up or disappearing like Itai Dzamara. You know, that's what we're hoping for. We're hoping this will be a new era in Zimbabwe.
As a young person, I think one thing we all worry about is whether we'll get jobs even if we have degrees. And knowing the previous president and not really addressing some of those issues, but I think a lot of things will change and hopefully he'll look into that as well.
Young people, they are expressing their expectations now that the country has a new president after 37 years of Robert Mugabe's leadership. Well, this is Pulse with me, Jane Nyinge. And yes, remember, you can be able to listen to this broadcast on our website, dwafrica.com, or our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, many of Africa's problems are associated with bad governance. But one organization, Clean Africa, is trying to bring a change. For the past few years, it's been organizing debates on good governance in various universities here in Germany. Both German and African students participate in the debates so that they can get a clear picture of the continent. Jenna Yeko, who volunteers for the organization, with the details from Stuttgart.
Preliminary rounds of the Good Governance Debate Series 2017. Quarter-final round on the motion. This House believes fake news is the cause of refugees in the EU.
The Good Governance Debate Series, GGDS, is one of the projects run by Clean Africa, a student-founded organization that was set up to promote community-level environmental awareness. Since 2012, the organization has been holding a series of debates on the subject of governance in Africa. This year, the debates centered around asking whether the refugee crisis is a result of a failed EU foreign policy or climate change.
A state in the grip of neocolonialism.
Denoa Sitole is a South African student of international taxation and law at the Rhine Vaal University. She kicked off the debate by blaming Africa's current problems on the continent's colonial past and the continuation of Europe's influence on the continent's political and economic affairs even today.
How can countries of the West today pose to give Africa a way forward, help to reduce poverty, if in actual fact, looking at history, understanding history and what Africa has undergone, that colonialism has put African countries, South American countries, in the position that it's in today? South America, Africa is poverty-stricken because resources have been stripped from these continents. People have been enslaved because of these practices. How can you expect to introduce a development policy rather than compensating these continents with what is rightfully theirs?
Georgina Milo, an American student at Frederick Alexander University in Erlangen, agreed. She too felt the EU's partnership agreement was a failure. For Georgina, Europe's unbalanced terms of trade have heavily impacted on Africa's markets.
No one here can question that there has been an economic failure overall by the EU to support the South the last 20 years. This can be seen easily through trade agreements that clearly make it advantageous for the EU in ways of prices, where they offer lower prices to the global south, strict standards that cannot be met by the global south due to lack of support, lack of funding, and lack of resources.
For the young debaters, Europe is responsible for Africa's problems. Its unfriendly policies have sparked the migrant crisis, hence Europe too should find the solution. But Simone Höckler-Hafner from the State Ministry of Baden-Württemberg begged to differ.
It is important for our society that we become aware of the impact of our modern lifestyle on other parts of the world that have not our possibilities of nourishing, mobility and consumption. I wanted to demonstrate that governmental development assistance alone can't solve every problem. In order to solve problems, we have to know the roots of these problems. To know about the causes why refugees leave their country is the most important step to be able to face these challenges.
But the GGDS Forum is not just about promoting intellectual debate on the big topics. The politicians were here to bring weight to the debate and help train the rhetoric capabilities, assertiveness, and debating talents of the students, essentially to incubate future leaders for both continents. Former alumni already hold public office in their home countries. One of them is George Akiliwara, who is now a policy analyst at the Integrated Social Development Center in Ghana. This year's cohort hope to follow in their footsteps.
I really like the debate series because I learned so much about Africa and about the policies and what is happening there and even the names of the countries, and I met some people from there.
I think this has been a great experience for everyone because not only we had the chance to learn about debating and how to actually speak in public, but also we had the chance to meet beautiful, amazing people from all over the world with beautiful spirits, and I think we had dealt with great important issues from Africa and Europe.
The experience has been a wonderful one. It has taught me to always believe in myself. Of course, we all know Africa is plagued with so many cases of underdevelopment, and the major cause basically is lack of good governance. It's just a wake-up call for young guys like us to begin to promote upcoming leaders, because they are the leaders of tomorrow who are going to take positions of authority.
And as the students left after their week of debates, they were played out to Peruvian music, which had its roots on the African continent. That was meant to symbolize the main point of the debate series, that we can all find unity in diversity. For DW, this is Jen Ayeka Kumet in Stuttgart, Germany.
Let's now shift our focus to the West African country of Senegal, which last year became a solar energy producing country. It's part of the country's plan to cut its greenhouse gas emissions and to provide electricity to the bulk of the population, which isn't connected to the grid. But one women's collective has beat the government to it by bringing small solar lamps to isolated communities. From Senegal, Emmanuel Lande reports.
4 women in colourful dresses sit under the shade of a tall mango tree at the entrance of Nyuto Jombas village. On the floor mat on the dusty ground lies a pile of money, which the women are busy counting. Barely looking up as I approach, the women continue to neatly separate the different coloured notes. Still counting, Khadifai smiles at me and then gestures for me to sit down. These women are part of an all-female collective of about 3,000 members from 42 neighbouring villages. The way it works is that they buy small solar-powered lamps in bulk and resell them. And today, they're counting the profits, Hadi explains.
They are affordable. Even though we live in an area where people don't have much money, they do everything to buy them. We have definitely seen our profits increase, which means we can get more lamps to resell.
The portable lamps are shaped like flowers with bright yellow petals. They're designed to hang around the neck or on a hook. On one side is a small solar panel that, if left to charge for 5 hours in the sun, can produce more than 50 hours of light at the dimmest setting or 4 hours at its brightest. These lamps are vital in a country where 43% of urban households do not have access to electricity. In rural areas, it's as high as 70%. That means for most people, once the sun sets, their households are plunged into darkness. Chores and homework are often finished off by candlelight. Without light, conditions are hard, says Aram Njai, the eldest of the women's collective and matron at the nearby health centre.
One night, a girl left her village to go to TS because she was in labour. But she only got as far as our village. It was dark. We have no electricity. Except I had my solar lamp, so I put it around my neck and I was able to help her give birth.
Some villages have a basic energy supply thanks to small off-the-grid solar installations rolled out by the Senegalese government with support from the UN Development Programme, but not everyone has benefited. Ndeye Fatou Ndiaye is the president of the 3,000-strong women's collective of the commune of Nioto, and she has big plans.
Many women's groups don't have electricity in their village. All the members of the collective want a lamp each. That's our goal. We have just recently started, but the lamp has really helped improve our development because in Nioto, there are 64 villages, but only 31 have electricity. Even the villages that have electricity buy the lamps for their rooms.
Ndiaye Fatou's own house is connected to the grid, but she still prefers to use a solar-powered lamp at night.
Since I bought a lamp, I use it at night to read instead of using electricity, because electricity is very expensive. With the lamp, it's free. And if you have it, you can switch it on every day and every night.
The solar lamps were invented by a German solar company, Little Sun. Its aim is to empower rural communities by providing business opportunities and access to electricity, as Nafi Gay from Little Sun explains.
To create a business, you need funds. And if you don't come from a family that is capable of helping you financially, you need to go to the bank. And we know that banks are not always a solution because they need guarantees. And so we come in to offer young people the possibility to sell our lamps and to make a benefit from their sales, which helps also to combat unemployment.
While Little Sun offers communities off-grid and small-scale energy solutions at the national scale, Senegal is also starting to transition to cleaner energy. By December 2017, 7 renewable energy projects will be created across the country. And by 2020, a wind farm northeast of Dakar is expected to be operational. Abdou Fall, president of the Renewable Energy Business Council, is confident the country can meet its great target of achieving energy independence by 2030.
Mais l'objectif global que le Sénégal s'est fixé.
The overall objective that Senegal has set is to achieve energy independence, energy sovereignty, by 2030 in accordance with the goals set out in our National Energy Development Plan.
For the women of Nioto Djambas, tomorrow looks set to be powered by renewable energy, one way or the other. For DW, Emmanuel Lande, in Thiès, Senegal.
What an incredible report to wrap up this week's show. Well, if you missed any bit of it or you want to listen again, visit our website, DW Africa, or our Facebook page, DW Africa. On behalf of the entire team here in Bonn, Germany, my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you so, so much for your time. La piscine, la voiture, l'avion, tu kiffes. Mon bébé, t'inquiète pas, j'assure tes arrières. Regarde-moi et dis-moi, Fali, à quoi boire. Je suis. Elle en a la nuit, appelle-moi Pé.